Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Hour number three on FST. Thanks for joining us on Fantasy Sports Radio Network. So, Kevin Walsh sending me interesting soccer tidbits. What happened with the rest of that match? I was caught up in talking about offensive lines.
It ended 1-1.
Draw. Okay. Well, Leo Messi's going to have that one hanging over him. They better advance out of the group stage in first place because that was a W. They had it. He got a penalty kick and he couldn't. That's the price of being Leo Messi, right? Life is good. And then you miss a penalty kick. That's not so fun for the next few days until they get back out there. So we'll see if he can get him a couple of wins later on in the group stage. I'm not sure who's in that group. It's Argentina, Iceland. Who else is in that group?
Is it Denmark and Peru?
I'll let you look it up. Well, okay. So you sent me a good picture of little kids that got a chance to meet Cristiano Ronaldo. They were super pumped. And then, Diego Maradona stuff. Let's just get out there on the internet and enjoy your Diego Maradona gifts and your videos.
Croatia and Nigeria. Those are no joke teams.
Who in Nigeria?
Croatia.
Yeah. That is one of the tougher groups out there. You could probably make the argument that it's the toughest only because people are picking Iceland as a dark horse type of pick to get out of the group stage, at least along with Argentina. Like maybe they would take out Croatia, who's actually had some success international tournaments, and Denmark as well. So or Nigeria has had some success as well. They're not considered to be the strongest African team this time around. I can't remember who I was watching breaking down the African team. So in any event, that's where we're at. Tie draw 1-1, Argentina and Iceland, and Leo Messi did not score on a penalty kick. So that's going to be a tough one to deal with the next couple of days. So one storyline for the NBA draft, which we said we're going to talk about to start here. We're going to talk baseball a little bit later in the hour. But 43 international players who had declared as early entry candidates for the NBA draft have withdrawn their names from consideration. Three collegiate players who have also withdrawn. So 79 college players and 12 international prospects remain for early entry candidates. And that's for 60 spots. So obviously some guys are not going to be too happy about that. One other thing I want to talk about before we talk about specific players, Kev, is that the early entry, the one and done rule, to put that in quotes, could be phased out as early as the 2021 season, draft season, end of college season. 2021 could be the first year that they phase it out, but not earlier. Which means that players will then be coming directly from high school, and you're going to have to deal with the problems that come with that. But at this point, everybody thinks the one-and-done thing is sort of ridiculous. It does not impact as many players and schools as people think, but it is still a thing. And we'd see plenty of freshmen get drafted every year. But that being said, how big of an impact do you think that has?
I think it has a very, very big impact. I actually think it's underrated for the very first year that it happened. So I think that's going to actually happen in 2022 based off what I read from Zach Lowe, because as of now, there are three teams that could still owe picks for the 2021 draft. And the reality is that draft, where they allow high school players to come in, is going to be loaded. It is going to be coveted to have your picks in that draft. And with this information coming out, it's going to impact the league. I do think that teams are now going to be very hesitant to be trading, at least teams that, I mean, if you're 100% competing, you feel like you're going to be competing for the next years, you're fine. But I think teams are going to be very hesitant to move on from picks for the 2022 draft, knowing how loaded it potentially could be. Think about this year's draft. You've got about, I would say, anywhere between 6 to 10 really big name prospects that guys are excited about. If you threw in this year's high school prospects with RJ Barrett, Cam Reddish, and Zion Williamson being the top three guys, all three of those guys enter this draft. So now you almost have a full lottery's worth of guys that you could make an argument have all-star potential. Maybe that's a high end, but that's kind of what we could be heading towards. So I think that it's incredibly impactful again for, and that's the way a lot of things are in sports. It's the trickle down effect. So now if this rule gets put in place, all of a sudden trades might be a little bit more difficult throughout the NBA, at least amongst teams that are at the lower level, or it could be the vice versa effect where teams are doing everything they can to get their hands on 2022 picks. And those picks become significantly more valuable than we would have once assumed.
I get that. But, you know, we're also talking a few years down the road. The kids that would be in that draft are, how are they, in eighth grade right now?
I mean, we don't know how.
But I know what you're saying. You're opening it up to more guys that don't have to deal with maneuvering their eligibility status to be entered into the draft, correct?
Well, yeah, it's the fact that this draft upcoming, right, if it has, let's just say conservatively, six guys that people think could be franchise players. If you added, I think that you could get upwards of probably five guys to come out from high school this year, maybe even more. It changes the dynamic drastically. It really does.
I get that. I remember I saw Zion Williamson play, and he's going to Duke next year. I saw him play. He has a typical athletic build for a basketball player. He honestly looks like a football player if you see him. And I remember watching him. It was like maybe the dunk contest or whatever McDonald's All-American stuff that was going on. And I remember being like, I wonder if that's going to work in the NBA. You know what I mean? He's listed at 6'6", 272. He's really muscular. Like, he's really built like a Jadavian Clowney, almost more so than a, I don't know, Paul George, for example. I'm mixing and matching heights and weights. I get all that. But so I just don't know. I don't know if that's going to work. I'm sure it'll work fine in college, but he's obviously super skilled. Say again?
He weighs 70 more pounds than RJ Barrett. It's just nonsense.
Then who?
RJ Barrett, the top player in.
Got it.
Yeah,
totally different build. And that's why, in some ways, his dunking ability, I think he won the dunk contest or whatever, was shocking because he isn't like a wiry guy like Zach LaVine, who won the NBA dunk contest. He's like jumps out of the gym, but he's like a beanpole, you know, in comparison to guys like that. So anyway, all right, so you do think it's going to have a big impact. That's interesting. Yeah, obviously, we'll have to keep that. You're right. It may be 2022. They said the earliest it would be 2021. So there could be some movement there, but unlikely to be any earlier for the reason.
Make sure Bronny can get in the league as soon as possible.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right, so let's talk about some of these guys. I listened to some pretty interesting NBA draft coverage and read some stuff leading up to this. But there have been thoughts that, like, Luka Doncic may be sliding a little bit. And others think that that's absolutely crazy, that he maybe should be the number one player in the draft. There are the thought process. We'll just talk about him first, Kevin. Then we'll bounce around to other guys. But he is the most accomplished player ever to come out of Europe. He's been playing in a professional league basically since he's 16. He has put up numbers in said league. He's only 19 right now, and he's playing with Real Madrid. And the thought process or that, why would you pass on this guy? We've seen other European players be successful without having his resume. This guy is bringing the goods to the league, despite the fact that it's not a heavily laden international draft at the top of the draft. It's all collegiate players, whereas we've seen other years a lot of foreign players be thrown into the lottery. Luka's really the only guy in there right now. So your thoughts on the fact that he's sliding, do you think it's nuts?
I do think it is nuts. So I've always enjoyed the concept of basketball as three positions. That's kind of now been more well circulated because of Brad Stevens, right? Is the idea of you have ball handlers, you have wings, and you have bigs. But I feel like in the most ideal world is you have guys that can sort of fill out your Venn diagram and come into different positions. And I feel when you look at this draft, there's not a lot of guys that can hit a lot of those boxes. Doncic is absolutely a ball handler and a wing at 6'8". And you just can't look past the fact that he is the most accomplished prospect coming over from Europe we have ever seen. To win at the age of 19, MVP of the league, and then MVP of the Final Four, and then MVP of the championship. It's unprecedented stuff.
Yeah, I mean, he's got comparison, some say, to Tony Kukoc, but he might have a little bit more of a killer's mentality than Kukoc had. Now, Phoenix has the number one pick. I'm sure offers will come their way, but they're in, depending on the mock draft that you read, they're basically deciding between Ayton and Doncic, but people are saying that it's shading towards Ayton now, and that's why we see Doncic slide. So, one other thing about Doncic is I will never pretend to be an international basketball expert. There are very few of those people out there. When the Knicks drafted Kristaps Porzingis, and I'm a Knicks fan, I was like, all right, we'll see what he's got. People were ticked off and saying, this is ridiculous. How did they draft that guy? I'm like, how many of you complaining have ever seen him play other than a 90-second YouTube highlight? Like, you don't know what kind of player he is. It turns out he's really damn skilled and really damn good. Hopefully he comes back in 2020 when his knee injury is healed. So that's a discussion for another day and my depression plummeting in regards to being a Knicks fan. But he's got a finishing move, Doncic. He's got like a step back three. He can shoot from outside. He is in line with the modern NBA as much as any European players have been. So that is what I can appreciate about him. But right now, DeAndre Ayton is slotted in for many people as the number one pick. There is a storyline in that he played basketball in college for the University of Arizona, and he wouldn't have to move from there in order to be the number one pick for the Suns. But there are, I guess, question marks about his commitment to playing defense, but he has the ability to do it.
My whole thing is, what I don't really understand for Phoenix specifically, right, is why would you draft Ayton when you are on the record? We're not on the record, right? But the report is already out there that they'd be willing to offer Clint Capela the match, which very well could be possible because they're going to be very aggressive in free agency, seeing if they can pull in LeBron or Paul George, which I think would force Capela to a new team. But also, you have a guy like DeAndre Jordan who could be available, and I just look at Luka Doncic, and I think that his ability to play next to a Devin Booker is exactly what you need in today's NBA. I think we've seen it now. You need two creators. And yes, it is important to have rim protection and stuff like that, but we've seen guys like DeAndre Ayton get phased out in the playoffs and they can't stay on the court. Like Hassan Whiteside was completely lost in that series against the 76ers. And there was another big of like size that was on there, but they exploit. And if you can't guard on the perimeter and if you can't protect the rim, it's really hard to justify keeping you on the court so I can throw the ball down to you in the low post when we get our turn on offense. Of all of these bigs, Ayton honestly might be the one that I am the most worried about. I understand. He looks like Dwight Howard. He is a freak. It is unreal. He is an athletic specimen. It just, to me, him going one feels.
And when you're saying the other bigs, are you talking about comparing to like Marvin Bagley yes. and Jaren Jackson or bigs of years past?
I'm talking about just even within this class of Bamba, Jaren Jackson are another, and Wendell Carter are all another level defensively than DeAndre Ayton. And it's definitively. And then Bagley has defensive concerns, but I at least like his fluidity as an athlete to potentially fix some of those problems there, at least in terms of maybe being able to switch out onto the perimeter.
I think that's a good point of Bagley. Plus forget his athleticism. I thought his skill level on the offensive side of the ball is what impressed me most this year. Like he has polished moves. He knows how to operate in the post. I thought Duke did make some mistakes against Kansas in the tournament and not forcing the ball to him. And I don't put it on him. I put it more on Coach K, who might question him. I just thought that it should have been getting to Bagley every time and not Grayson Allen missing 9 shots in that game. But I just appreciate Bagley's skill level. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about this, and then we'll transition over to baseball. So it's Mike and Kevin talking NBA draft and baseball for the remainder of this hour. We'll come back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network after this. Come right back.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
FST. Headed towards the top of the hour where In This League takes over. Bogman and the Welsh, 12-3. 36, George Kurtz and Joe Galina with Weekend Fantasy Update. So we're talking about Bagley before the break. I'm with you. I like the fact, well, here, you know, this is really the issue, right? So the draft is on Thursday. Correct?
Correct.
And free agency opens when?
1st of July.
That's right. So in the NFL, free agency is before the draft. So you can put the pieces together a little bit better. The NBA is backwards. You don't know who you're going to get in free agency. So you got to build a team from the draft that figure out how to piece it around. And so you're talking about the Clint Capela move. That's speculation, right? They're conceivably trying to get Clint Capela, but will they feel as if they're not building the team the way they want to if they draft Doncic and then don't get a big man like the one they want in Capela? But you're saying like DeAndre Jordan could be the second prize there, mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean it's one of those things where would you rather be stuck? I just look at the worst case scenario for prospects too. Like sometimes we don't talk enough about so obsessed with a player's ceiling. I'm like the worst case for DeAndre Ayton is he's a super Jack Dennis Kanter. That's horrifying. And it's unplayable. You like that one?
I always like those. No, I just like I have to give him credit because he kind of popularized that. But Bill Simmons would always make these ridiculous comparisons, and I respect his basketball knowledge greatly. But he's like, He's like a super Jack Ennis Cantor, or, you know, when you say it's a poor man's guy, say like, well, he's really like a destitute Paul George, or a homeless Jared Bayless, which is unplayable. You know, like he would make weird comparisons like that, which are always funny. And I'm like, I know you're trying to sometimes thread the needle on those comparisons. But anyway, I can appreciate that. So, yeah, DeAndre Jordan, it's a player option for this upcoming season of $25 million. So he would, what would he have to do? Like decline his player option with the Clippers, then become a free agent. And then that, is that basically what he's assumed to be doing at this point?
Yeah. I think that he'll be opting out for sure. It's a matter of whether it's there, the Clippers takes a bunch of meetings. I'm assuming he's just going to go highest bidder.
So, all right. Well, I can appreciate that, but I think it comes back to the thing that we always really should be talking about, and that's that he's going to take the best player. And if you think it's Doncic and not Ayton, so be it. Now, there are exceptions to that. Like, if they already had an established big man, you don't take Ayton. Like, you have to be... You take the best player available as often as you can, but if you already have somebody at the position, you just don't take that guy. So if they had an established center, they'd be out on Mobamba and Ayton and the rest. But they're kind of wide open. Like, really, what to your point about their assets, their starting lineup right now is Elfrid Payton, Devin Booker, TJ Warren, Marquise Chris, Tyson Chandler. Josh Jackson is obviously getting minutes there, and Tyler Ulis. But I'm with you. I think you get another ball handler, a scorer. I'm on board with Doncic. Obviously, of the players that I've watched, I really do like Marvin Bagley. There's going to be defensive question marks there, but you know, he played in his zone basically for most of the year at Duke. So I'm with you on Doncic. So let's talk about some other players as well. In the mock draft that I'm looking at, I happen to be looking at the Hoops Hype mock draft. Trae Young coming in at number 3.
Woo!
For Atlanta. So he's risen on from some of the other mock drafts I've seen. But that would be something. And this mock draft was done yesterday, so published yesterday. So Atlanta taking Trae Young. The pick mate, according to this writer, and I want to give him props, it is Aaron Smith from Hoops Hype. The pick may not make a lot of sense, as the one position that the Hawks appear to be set at is point guard. But it's clear that Dennis Schroeder has not been on the same page with the rest of the team, and there's a good chance he will be moved this offseason, possibly on draft night. The team's GM, Travis Schlenk, was with Golden State when they drafted Steph Curry and may see enough similarities with Trae Young to select him at 3. Good logic. Do you buy that?
Yes. I don't know how this happened. I have no idea how this happened. But people decided that they needed to try to be the smartest person in the room on Trae Young, and it's made a lot of people. For some reason, we can't get through Trae Young talks without going, stop. It's nonsense. What are we doing here? We know that offense is far more important. And we know that transcendent offense is far more important. Now, I'm okay with everybody pumping the brakes on saying, please don't compare him to Steph Curry. That's dangerous. He's arguably a top 10 player of all time. That's what we need to do. But I can't entertain.
He isn't, but that's okay. I love Steph Curry. He isn't, but that's okay.
I didn't say I don't think he is either. But some people would make the argument.
Okay.
I don't think he is either. But the people are doing this whole stuff with Trae Young to the point where it's like, oh, did you want to draft Patrick Beverley with one of your top 5 picks? Like, it is what he did at Oklahoma has never been done. He led college basketball in scoring and assists. He averaged more points per game than Markelle Fultz, who went 1 last year because of his ability to score. He averaged more assists per game than Lonzo Ball, who went number 2 because of his ability to pass. At some point, we are going to get past the fact that at the moment, at 19 years old, he is smaller than people would like. He is going to get picked on defensively, 100%.
Yeah.
But at some point, we are going to acknowledge that is not the most important thing. He is not Isaiah Thomas. He is 7 inches taller than Isaiah Thomas.
Kyrie is only 6'3", right? He's obviously not as slight as Trae Young. And Trae Young's listed at 6'2". You know, he could put some weight on. I don't know how much weight he puts on. I have questions about his size, but I can appreciate what you're saying. That, look, the guy is an offensive powerhouse, but can he create his own shot in the way that Steph Curry can? In the way that Steph Curry can, I don't know if anybody can really do that. But, you know, can he create his own shot? As a general question, yes. I think as much as I was critical of him towards the end of the year and Oklahoma and not thinking they should be in the tournament, I do think to some extent you have to extract that when evaluating him as an NBA player. I think it's hard to do, but I think you do have to try to do that, right? Because to your point, he was scoring and distributing as much as he possibly could. The fact that the supporting cast wasn't as great as other years at Oklahoma, whose problem is that? It wasn't his. What did he take, 39 shots in a game? Was that right?
I think there was a
39 shot game. Yeah. People harped on that because he took 39 shots in one game, that he was just a ball hog and whatever. But look, you're trying to fit this guy into a modern-day NBA offense. He obviously has shooting range and can score. I do have questions about his size, but we'll keep going. We'll do a couple more players and move on to MLB. So you want to throw one out where there's been buzz one way or the other, a guy that you're interested in?
Absolutely. Michael Porter Jr., right now there is a report that the Grizzlies could be interested in him at 4. I mean, this is one of the most polarizing prospects I think the lottery's seen in a while, right?
Back injury, right? Which has persisted since high school.
Yeah. So top three player coming out of high school, pretty much the most heralded wing prospect of this class coming out of high school. And the back keeps him out of almost the entire year for Missouri. He comes back in the SEC tournament and for an NCAA tournament game, looked horrible in both games. There's now still reports that he's having muscle spasms in his back. A lot of people still trying to get the information on just how healthy he is. There's been some reports, how true they are, and it's up for you to decide, that there are locker room concerns with him, that he wasn't really meshing well with the teammates at Missouri. It is all incredibly interesting to me. I think why he, though, is such a point of contention is because, as we kind of were talking about with Ayton, right, is wings are king in today's NBA. That's just how it is, right? Because you're not going to phase Trevor Ariza off the court. You're not going to phase Klay Thompson off the court. Guys that can score, guys that have the size to at least defend at a certain degree, that is what matters. And Michael Porter Jr. was the most heralded wing prospect coming in. So he is someone that people think he could go high as 2. There are some people who make the argument that he shouldn't go in the lottery because of the health and things of that nature.
Yeah, so he has this back injury that has persisted since high school. I think the other rumors are fair. I think another important thing to note regarding him is that there is seemingly momentum for doctors to be able to get a good look at the back, test it, make sure it's okay, make sure there's nothing chronic in there or in a pre-existing injury currently, something that might require surgery or whatever. So say it all the time. You're better off fading an injured player than not. But you're right. He's probably the most polarizing guy because everybody admits he's got top three talent. I can't judge him on those games that when he came back, he was out of shape. He was out of shape and expected to contribute in high pressure tournaments. Like he didn't play the whole year. So what possible shape could he be in, basketball shape, A, and B, what kind of on-court chemistry could he possibly have with his teammates that he hasn't played in games in a year? It just put him in a bad spot. He probably just shouldn't have come back. I appreciate him wanting to, but all in all, it's kind of a wash for me. Maybe he shouldn't have come back. He didn't play well. I'll pass on that. I'm more concerned with his back than anything else, as I'm sure everybody else is. So, look, we'd love to do more on this. We got to get to some baseball, absolutely.
Coach K's entire starting five is going to be drafted. At what point do we start looking at Coach K and ask questions? Because Jason Tatum came out of college being looked at as a negative defender. He turned in somehow to a plus defender and was incredible year one. this whole starting five is about. Like, at what point can we start asking questions?
Questions about Coach K's ability to coach defense?
I mean, just to move along with the game. How are five NBA players being forced to play zone? He's clearly not doing any of them a benefit.
He didn't historically do that, but I think it's because he's made this shift to one and done players. So he thinks, and I don't blame him for thinking this, it's Coach K, that it's much easier to teach them to play zone defense than to come in for guys that are going to be there for 4 months and teach them his historical style of defense. He doesn't play purely zone. He plays mostly zone, but it's important to note that. In the past, he didn't do that. I don't think this is indicative of Coach K's resume. I think he's doing it because these guys are coming in and out and leaving with Carter and Bagley and all the other guys that have come through one and done recently, and Zion Williamson and Cam Reddish and those guys will as well. So I think that's why. I don't think it's about his ability to coach defense. I think he's just trying to make it easier for everybody to learn the zone and be effective in it in the course of a college season. Maybe that's the wrong call, but I'm not going to doubt the guy. Where the hell am I? You know what I mean?
I don't know. It's just, to me, though, I don't understand how he's still getting the top guy. I understand he's Coach K, but like, he's clearly not setting them up for the best long-term success. That's why Wendell Carter had to come out and say, I wasn't able to show everything that I could do at Duke. That's why Marvin Bagley's having to address all these concerns about his defense. That's why Trevon Duval and Gary Trent Jr. are trying and hoping that they can get into the first round while they were both the top guards at their respective positions coming out of high school. I understand that it's easier to play a zone. But at what point is it not beneficial to say, we're going to figure this thing out? Like, it's just, part of it is too, I watch a lot of Kentucky basketball, and Coach Cal is just almost like, we're going to figure this out because you're all going to the NBA. Like, he has more people running pick and roll. He gets furious every time he has to put people into zone defense because, like, this is not going to help you. And then there's just Coach K with literally five NBA players, and they're playing zone against Syracuse. Embarrassing.
Yeah, I get you. I get what you mean. Your Kentucky side is showing through there, but I understand it. I think it's actually a fair question. One guy who's risen up, like you and I both know how good he is, Jonte DiVincenzo. In this mock draft I'm seeing, he's 17 to Milwaukee. He had a very good combine, and that has helped him a lot because there were thoughts that he was a fringe first rounder, and to see him all the way up at 17 in this particular mock draft, I think is indicative of him being cemented as a first round pick. I mean, 17, you're breathing down the neck of the lottery right there.
It was like
and there were doubts as to whether or not he'd even be a first rounder.
He ended up being like the best athlete at the combine. Like, the running jokes right around white athletes, right, is the whole deceptively quick thing. DiVincenzo showed up and was like the best athlete in the building. It was wild. So yeah, when people start to see some of the tools, the huge national championship game, and then they go, oh, this isn't a deceptive athlete. This is an athlete. Yeah, I guess that's kind of how it's going to go.
No, he took granted, he had a crazy showcase in the national championship game, but anybody that had watched him all year realized that he would surprise you the first time or two, but once you watched him regularly, you realize the type of player he is. Well, I'll give you one more player since we're running up against the clock, but I heard some speculation that from a couple of draft Knicks that they liked Wendell Carter almost more than Bagley long-term in the NBA. Do you agree with that?
It's tough. I think that it's way less likely for Wendell Carter to bust, but Marvin Bagley's potential is are higher. So it's up to the team to decide what they're trying to do with their pick.
Yeah, true. I'd be with Bagley on that side of the argument, but as Carter said, like, he didn't get a chance to showcase as much, but he's 6'10 and he's 19 years old. And in this particular mock draft, they have Aaron Smith has Carter going to the Knicks at 9 to complement the unicorn long term. So that's it for our NBA draft coverage for now. Obviously, we'll talk about it next week after the draft happens on Thursday. We'll come back. I know we shorted baseball a little bit today, but it's a unique day. A lot of stuff going on. We're going to talk baseball in the final segment before we hand it off. It's Mike and Kevin. Come back. Join us right after this.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to FNTSY Sports Radio. We are talking a little bit of baseball right now, and get to Kevin and after that to find out exactly what it is he's going to watch today. There's a lot going on. U.S. Open, World Cup. There's a lot of baseball on, obviously. You can dive into NBA draft stuff. I'm sure NBA TV is running a whole bunch of stuff. So, I'll start with the Red Sox and Mariners because I heard a stat this morning, which I could not believe. The Mariners have played 32 one-run games already this year, and they have won 22. They've won 22 one-run games already this year. That is a crazy number. And they did it last night. They squeaked past the Sox by one. I think the final score was 7-6. And a bunch of offense in that game. Let me get to it here. 7-6 final. So D. Gordon made a huge diving catch to save the day there. And Xander Bogaerts had an RBI base hit basically stolen by D. Gordon in that game. And there was plenty of offense to boot outside of that. So 7-6 win. Diaz gets his 26th save of the year. The Mariners are 45-25. What's amazing about that is they are in lockstep with Houston, who is in the midst of a 9-game win streak. 9 in a row for Houston. They now have the lead by a half game, but Seattle has a game in hand. So it's a virtual tie, first place. That's what I'm impressed by. Houston on a 9-game win streak. Mariners are effectively tied with them at 45-25. They're not; those two teams are not far off from the pace that the Yankees and Sox have been blistering out to. The Yankees had a 692 winning percentage, Sox at 676, and then Houston, Seattle, 648, 643. Really not far behind at all. But let me get you some numbers from that game. Gene Segura hits a home run and his 43rd RBI of the year for Gene Segura. So he's 2-for-4 last night. D. Gordon, 1-for-5. Let's see who else. Kyle Seager, 1-for-4 with a run scored. Healy, 1-for-3. Zunino, 2-for-4. He had a home run as well. I saw that in the highlights. 2-for-4. He has 2 RBIs. On the Red Sox side of things, Bogaerts hit his 11th home run of the year. That's off of James Paxton. James Paxton owners, as good as he's been, obviously not happy about last night's outing. He's 2 1/3 last night, 5 earned runs, 6 total, 6 hits, and he was out. He couldn't even make it through the 3rd inning. So, tough deal there. Cook with the win. Diaz with the save. Matt Barnes. That's not Matt Barnes. Yeah, it is Matt Barnes. I thought that was right. I'm just used to the Matt Barnes, the basketball player. So I don't want to get that mixed up. But Porcello gets to start. No decision. 9 strikeouts. 4 earned runs through 6 innings. So There you go, Kev. A lot of numbers in that one. A lot of runs scored. But the starting pitching wasn't what it was cracked up to be last night. Porcello with an okay start. Paxton got beat up a little bit.
I think what you mentioned, though, just kind of about the standings, right? I mean, the fact that the Astros have needed a 9-game win streak to be what is right now a half game up of the Mariners is kind of one of the crazier things. And I think one of the things is just kind of what the Mariners are going to do when Cano comes back, because now it seems like they will be competing when that happens, and having to keep in mind that he won't be there if you are in the postseason. So a situation that, at least for me, when the Cano news broke, I was like, yeah, it's probably going to be the Mariners' season. Not to say that he is what he once was, but at the time they weren't doing that great. To lose a guy like Cano felt like it would kind of be maybe the final nail in the coffin. And now they're going to have a real, I don't know if situation is the right word, but definitely a decision to really think about when Cano comes back, keeping in mind that he won't be there for any type of postseason play.
I think it's a good point, and I don't have an answer. I really don't know what that's going to be. It's going to be, obviously, look, I think the players know that Robbie Cano is not out on an island. There's got to be somebody else in that locker room that's engaging in just, this is obviously guesswork, but just based on the numbers, there's got to be somebody else in the locker room that's enhancing in some way, right? Would you guess that that's accurate?
I hate to say yes, but I think it's definitely fair.
Right. So now the Giants had a situation with Melky Cabrera where they basically told him to pound sand, don't come back to the team. The Mariners obviously can't do that because Robbie is locked up long term. And has also, to this point, been beloved by his teammates. At least he was with the Yankees. I haven't heard anything to the contrary in Seattle. And I think the players, my ultimate point is the players probably take it easier on their teammates.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
Especially if he's been a part of the franchise, they take it easier on it. Management has a right to be irritated because either A, you're doing it, or B, you're doing it and were stupid enough to get caught, maybe in their estimation. It's not like baseball management hasn't known that players are engaging in this kind of stuff. So I think it's a good question. It's something I don't have an answer to, but I think players kind of take it easy on him. Management's going to be ticked because if they're in the playoffs, he can't be there, right? But impressive. So I'll keep going towards other games. Had a big outing, another good outing last night from Ross Stripling. Ross Stripling for the Dodgers. He goes 6 1/3, gets his sixth win of the year. He's 6-1. ERA down to, he's 6 strikeouts on the night. ERA down to 1.76. His last few games, and we looked them up, his last 7 games, he's 6-0 of the, in those 7 starts. He's got a 1.67 ERA, 43 innings pitched. Only 8 earned runs and 54 strikeouts. His whip is down to 0.79 in those last 7 starts. So he's on fire. Holland takes the loss last night. He only went 5 innings, gave up 2 runs, but it's a 3-2 win for the Dodgers, who's another team that, despite missing a significant player, now they're not on as hot a streak, but their head is above water for now, at least. Forsyth goes 2 for 3 with a double. Hernandez hits his 9th home run of the year. He goes 1 for 3 on the night. And Matt Kemp hit his 11th home run of the year off of Holland. So a couple of solo home runs there. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's right. A couple of solo home runs there. On San Francisco side of things, they only managed 4 hits the whole night. Sandoval had 2 of them, 2 for 3 with 2 RBIs. His 2-run homer was their only score of the night. So the Dodgers are another team that, despite missing Kershaw and having multiple injuries, heads above water right now at 36-32 as we start to focus in on what the trade market is going to look like. We're 6 weeks out from that deadline, but obviously there's almost always a premature move. Mm. Could it be the Yankees for a pitcher? Is it the Dodgers for somebody? you know, we start to get to that time of year, there's usually a deal at least one deal at the end of June because somebody was trying to get in before the market started to blow up on them.
We did get the Brian Cashman update that I think it's he's contacted over 20 teams in baseball looking for starting pitching and has said that Gleyber Torres is untouchable.
He's right. He is untouchable.
I mean, yeah, no, I'm not.
I have no argument. I'm saying this has come up a lot, obviously, right. And it's insane to think. I think any team should ask for him, but I bet you he got so tired of people asking. He was like, "I appreciate that you want our best player, our best prospect, and frankly, our best player on the team right now, but he's not being traded. So that's a non-starter. Let's start with the other guys." I'm sure Andujar's name comes up all the time. And I'm sure Justice Sheffield and Chance Adams and Clint Frazier and you name it. Bunch of young guys that are both prospects in the minors and at a major league level are being asked for, I'm sure. But it's best for him to just say, please don't ask for Torres anymore.
I mean, right? I agree. It is one of those things where it is kind of incredible to see the Yankees have such a massive need in starting pitching and be confident. And I would say right in their decision, though, to say that's a non-star. Like, I'll live with Sonny Gray before I trade you.
Yeah. He's untradeable. He just is. And Boone, Aaron Boone, when he said it a few weeks back, he said, you know, Torres doesn't do one thing that jumps off the page as a elite tool. He just does everything really well. But I think he even undersold that because I think he's going to be doing a couple of things really well in the years to come. So as bright a prospect as the Yankees have had, and Aaron Judge and Gary Sanchez are on this team. So I think that says everything you need to know. Sanchez, by the way, broke a little bit. I mean, I don't know if he broke the schneid last night, but he did have a homer. He's still hitting 189, but he did have a three-run shot last night. Is that right? No, he had three. Yeah. Am I wrong? No, I'm sorry. He had a double last night. He had three RBIs on the night. Gregorius had a home run last night.
Edie's back.
Three for four, two runs. Been waiting for it. It's hitting 254 right now. You know, it's funny, but I've heard people say, and I've had people comment to me that the Yankees not really sure how they're winning all these games because you look up and down the roster and there's a bunch of guys that aren't hitting particularly well. Torres is back down to 289. He went over three last night. Andujar's 304. Aaron Hicks plays most games in center field. He's 237. Gary Sanchez plays every day at catcher whenever he can. 189. Bird, 203. Yeah, granted, he hasn't played that much. Stanton at 242. Judge down to 279. Gregorius at 254. And Gardner at 262. Gardner was on fire for a little while. Gregorius has been cold for 5 weeks, and people are like, "How are they? They just hit home runs." And yes, they have 110 home runs already, but you know, that's a little bit more indicative of what we talked about a couple of weeks ago. It is a little bit more indicative of what baseball looks like now. Yes, you look up and down the lineups, there's just no 300 hitters. In fact, they played Tampa last night. Tampa's got one. It's Matt Duffy. And yeah, Matt Duffy, so he's actually played, he's got 215 at bat. So Matt Duffy's hitting 312. But of the two teams that played last night, there's only one 300 hitter. Just about everybody else is hitting below 290. In fact, everybody else is hitting below 290 that isn't named Miguel Andujar. So I just think, like we referenced a couple of weeks back, or maybe it was last week, the Yankees, despite the struggling batting averages as a team, they're a top 10 batting average team. So that's just more about baseball in 2018 than it is anything else. So Yankees get the 5-0 win last night. Rookie Loaisiga, he gets his major league debut, and he gets the win. Five innings pitched. He didn't give up any runs, three hits, four walks, six strikeouts. Betances has actually picked it back up. He has the hold last night along with Holder and Robertson. But Betances, his last, I think, seven outings, he's really been on fire. So he may have fixed what ails him. And there you go. The Yanks get the win over former Yankee Nate Eovaldi. So a nice win for them. So we keep going on. We'll do one more and then find out what I saw. One highlight I saw, which is worth bringing up, is Brewers-Phillies. Because the Phillies, despite Jake Arrieta starting the game, had to bring in their second baseman to pitch. It's always a good time. Yes, Mule Valentin pitched last night. You know what happened? Oh. Not good times for him, Kev.
No.
Nope. Jesus Aguiar hit a three-run bomb off it, and it was a no-doubter. That's what happened when second baseman pitch. They give up three-run bombs to professional hitters that hit 285 and crush home runs because it's their job. Aguiar's 12th home run of the year, he hit an opposite field bomb off of Valentin, who obviously shouldn't be pitching. He's going to leave the year with a 27 ERA. It's tough, hey. Bad times. But Arrieta threw himself under the bus. There was lots of errors. Oh, he gave up eight runs. Only four were earned. And Arrieta was... So Arrieta, bad night for him. Go ahead.
I actually forgot. I wanted to... If I did mention this last week, please do stop me. But I think I forgot to mention it. I was watching MLB Network. Now, remind you, I wanted to mention this last week, so the stats could have changed. But I don't know how drastically. And it came up when Jake Arrieta was just talking about his overall frustration with the team. And I think that it was not only related to the lack of hitting, but also kind of the defensive shifts. And the stat was wild. The Phillies at the time, their defensive run saved by the shift was -8. The second worst team was +1. So there are 30 teams in baseball. 29 of them have been helped by the shift. Even marginally, it's a +1. And the Phillies at the time were -8. I thought it was jarring. I thought it was wild. I didn't know if it was going to lead to people opening up the conversation of, is the shift good? I don't know if you really could do that right when 29 other teams are benefiting from it. But it was one of the
97%. 97% of the league is benefiting. So I think we'll go the other way. I think it's fluky. They made four errors last night, which is a big contributor in the fact that they lost the game 13-2. Yelich had a home run. I mentioned Perez had a home run. I mentioned the Aguiar home run. Lorenzo Cain had a good night last night. He's 2-for-5 with two ribbies. The win goes to Suter, who moves to 7-4, seven innings strong. Only one earned run. That's Brent Suter. So let's close the book on baseball because we only have about a minute left and get a sense of what it is that you're going to watch today. Fox owns all the content, so I think I'm just going back and forth between the U.S. Open and the World Cup, just flipping back and forth.
Yeah, it's all World Cup for me today. I'm super excited about it. I'm excited to see Eriksen play for Denmark. I'm excited to see Modric play for... I'm all in on the World Cup right now. I'm absolutely loving it. I have a buddy of mine. We both kind of tend to take the Ronaldo side of Ronaldo versus Messi stuff, but we kind of just like to sometimes aggravate the Messi fans. And he texted me. He's like, I'm taping the Argentina game. Don't text me when Messi F's up. That's what he said. And he said he doesn't even know how it went yet. So he's going to be super excited. Also, before we wrap it up, happy Father's Day, Buff. Thanks for always listening.
Thanks. Thank you to you. Thanks to your dad. Thanks to all the fathers out there listening. Have a great weekend. We'll join you next Saturday. Enjoy the U.S. Open. Enjoy the World Cup. Enjoy all the baseball and anything else that you might be watching. Coming up next is In This League with Bogman and the Welsh. Thanks, and have a great weekend.